One of the best songs ever. Come on, Eileen. Hey, everybody, it's Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here, broadcasting from the Derby City at 840 WHAS in Louisville, Kentucky, one of the many iHeart studios. We are preparing for our next guest coming up, David Weatherly. See if he knows this tune. I could see him dancing to this one with his cool hat that he's got. Check out his picture on coasttocoastam.com. He's always got this cool hat on. We will be discussing a couple of his books, Black Eyed Children, just a little bit, because this is what he talks about all the time. So we want to get into some other things. This man really has a lot of substance to him. Also, Strange Intruders. We will talk about that. Man, I checked that book out this past week. Some of the things that he's experienced, I tell you, I've seen some of the same. Plus some adventures that he and I had together we're going to discuss as well. And many other adventures that he's had around the planet himself. He's quite the guy. He's got a lot of really neat things to discuss, strange entities, different encounters that he's had, and other people as well. We're talking about the djinn, shadow people, grinning men. That's a funky one, and some others. So that's what's coming up for you next year. Stick around with us here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM. Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis with our featured guest tonight, David Weatherly, going to be discussing his encounters and other people's encounters with strange entities. And we're talking about djinn, shadow people, grinning men. I don't even know how to say the Puck Woodgy things. I guess David will be able to do that. But just recently, I met David, and that was very exciting to do. He's the author of, by the way, Black Eye Children and also Strange Intruders, and I know he's working on more. But I got to meet him recently, and I'll let him tell you more about that. Let's bring him on. David, welcome to the show.
Connie, thanks for having me on.
It's great to be able to do this. We just met recently, and I knew immediately that, hey, gosh, this guy's extremely interesting. He's got a lot going on, and it's actually more than just the Black Eyed Children. So you're living the dream, basically, David. You're living the dream. You're getting to do a whole lot of really neat things that a lot of people would really love to do, and that's travel the country and the world, getting to learn about and research strange anomalies.
That's correct. I mean, I'm just kind of pursuing what I've always really loved to do. And, you know, over the years have finally come to a place in my life where I'm able to do that pretty much full time. And I've been chasing this stuff since, you know, the 1970s. I'm telling my age a little bit there. But it's always been my passion to pursue these types of things. And, you know, it's like Joseph Campbell said, you know, follow your bliss and everything else falls into place. And my bliss just turned out to be, you know, pursuing really weird and strange things wherever I could find them.
Oh, that's okay. We're all in it with you here. That's not a problem. We love to hear that kind of thing. So you and I, luckily, got to meet Anthony Sanchez is the one who basically put us together, putting together his, when he was here not too long ago talking about Ghost Hunter apps. Anthony, who a great friend of mine, great friend of yours, pulled together some people to do three webisodes, a great team of people, and Paranormal Shock TV.
Yeah, Anthony put together a really cool project, and the first episode hasn't even launched yet because literally it's been, gosh, I've been traveling since then. It's been, I guess, a couple of weeks now that we filmed. And, of course, the editing process is pretty heavy, but we have some really cool experiences and got to do some work at some haunted locations in California, in Georgetown, and also, of course, Virginia City, which proved to be a really rich area for the kind of things we were looking for.
Some crazy stuff going on. And we got to call in on George's show and tell him what was going on. That was pretty cool. We ran out of time, so George had said, Connie, talk about it next time that you're on. And I appreciate that he said that because, yeah, we had an incredible group. Anthony pulled together, first of all, what his buddy and pal, and I got to tell you, they, to me, and David, you're going to laugh about this, but I see Anthony's buddy is Rick Prestel, which is he's also with the Sacramento MUFON. Correct. If you watch those two guys walking the other way from you and the buddies that they are to each other, I'm telling you, it's Fred and Barney. You know, they're pals, they're buddies, they get into things together, they have great communication like that. And I just thought, you know, I look at things in a cartoon, and that's who those guys were for sure.
That's
but Anthony,
but yeah, he pulled together a great team. I mean, Rick did a lot of excellent camera work along with Anthony's son.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had Steve Huff from Huff Paranormal, and of course yourself, and Dave Spinks, a good friend of mine from Country Roads Paranormal. And man, what a dynamite team. You know, it's not too often that a group like that comes together, and it's something that, you know, you get this chemistry, you can't always recreate it, but it was pretty amazing. It really was. And we did some amazing sites in Virginia City, especially the Washoe Club, which I know you want to talk about a little bit.
Oh, I do. And before the Washoe Club, we also had Banjo the Spirit Dog. You got to remember Banjo.
That's right. Yeah.
Banjo knows what's going on. And, you know, yeah, like you said, Sean Sanchez, his son, he was the one doing camera work, and he got to see the shadow figure at, what was it, the Georgetown Hotel?
That was the Georgetown Inn. Mm-hmm, the hotel in Georgetown.
Wow, he got to see it. The one person that was probably like, yeah, okay, I believe, but, you know, it's more my dad thing. And boom, he's the one that sees it. And that's what happens. That's how you get hooked.
Sometimes it happens like that, you know. It really does. And, you know, it's always interesting, too, Connie. I mean, I've been independent in this stuff for a lot of years, but I do frequently get together with different people that I trust in the field and do things. And it's always fascinating to me to see the responses you get at these locations and how that interacts with the specific combinations of people. You know, I've been at sites with people who had a lot of experience in the field, and I thought, wow, you know, we surely will have some experiences or get something here, and there's been nothing. And, you know, then other occasions, you know, when we got to Georgetown, Dave Spinks and I walked in the hotel virtually, you know, starting to investigate right away, and we were just getting stuff left and right. And
yeah,
it's pretty amazing. You know, sometimes it's just the correct combination of people, and that really gets into realms that we don't completely understand, you know, as to how our individual energies interact with whatever's going on at the location.
I do remember when you guys went right to work when that was the case, and it is interesting when you pull that many people together and you try to do get things on tape, because you do have to have people running around and getting the camera equipment ready, and you hope that you catch something. However, sometimes these entities are like, no, I'm not doing it on camera. I'm going to go over here and mess with these people, like you and Dave when you were working. Dave Spinks, if you guys didn't hear it, is with Country Roads Paranormal out of West Virginia. He's ex-law, ex-military, retired. I can't believe he's retired. He's like a kid, you know. I mean, he's too young, but he's retired. Steve Huff of the Huff Paranormal that you talked about with the spirit communication boxes and stuff like that. Just amazing people. And, of course, you yourself, Noreen Balovich with Paranormal Zone TV. Didn't get to meet her yet. I'm looking forward to that. But also who was with us was Linda Potter, that joined us later, intuitive and does the regression. So that many people with that many abilities and able to, you know, detect things and not afraid to go there, pulls together a great group. And you're right, sometimes things happen and sometimes don't. You guys got right into it immediately with all the locations, cemetery that we were at, as well as the hotel bar. But then it went pretty crazy when we got to the Gold Hill Hotel, absolutely, for sure, when it came with Steve and I upstairs in the areas that we didn't realize that was the spot where even Anthony wouldn't go upstairs and Linda wouldn't go upstairs to those rooms. Isn't that correct? They never went up there once.
That's correct. That's especially a house that's connected to or it's owned by the people who own the Gold Hill Hotel. So it's available to rent it out. And, you know, some real mixed history there. It seems to be one of those locations that just attracts a lot of spirit activity for some reason. And over the years, some people have had some pretty strange experiences there. And, of course, we won't divulge all of that. You know, we'll hold a lot of that for the Paranormal Shock episode.
Oh, you're right.
But
you're right.
It's
okay.
Going to be pretty exciting for people to see. And what I loved about it was that, you know, we had some experiences there, but we're also able to later on tie in some of the history of the area that we didn't know about to some of the events that were unfolding there.
That was incredible. And if you're just joining us here on Coast to Coast AM, we're talking with David Weatherly, who has written a couple of books, and he's also ventured the world. And just recently, I got to be a part of a group of people doing some webisodes, some really fun, neat little webisodes that Anthony Sanchez put together. And David is, I got to learn and see how he works. And one of the, it was very interesting, as you were talking about how things were pulled together, events happened. And I'm kind of the person, you know, I go feel, I experience it, I want to talk about it. We all have our own attributes. We all have our own things that we all do. And David is the one that, you're this great researcher. I mean, we can have events happen. You go to the local bookstore and pull it all together. That's impressive to me.
You know, I like to find the connecting links. And
you do.
I think that it helps us better understand, you know, exactly, you know, what's going on, what we're experiencing. It's great, you know, a lot of people go into these locations and they catch EVPs, which is electronic voice phenomena, on recorders. They use some kind of a device to do spirit communication, and they get voices and they hear all these different words and everything. Well, that's pretty fascinating, but for me, it gets really intense when you can tie those names or the things that are being mentioned to specific events that happened in the area.
In the history
and,
of the
you know,
area,
even
yeah.
in the exact location. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a great example is, again, the Washoe Club, which
yes.
became really popular and well-known after it was highlighted on Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel. But,
right.
you know, it's a location that a lot of people enjoy going to. It's available for paranormal teams to rent out now. And it's an amazing building. It really is. It's built in the 1870s. They do ghost tours there now. And you know, we got to give a special shout out to Betty Weimar, who was kind enough to take us upstairs and show us some of the areas.
She was great. She was great. I kept seeing her, too, in the city.
Accessed. And it was great because we had an ITC device out. And mm-hmm. I'll explain what those are a little bit more for people who don't know. But we had this device out that basically... you know, their voices come out of it, and as soon as Betty walked in the room, you know, this thing responded to her, and you know, she was kind of flabbergasted, but it was a great experience for her, and it's great to see, you know, people have those types of experiences that never had before. And you know, she was really blown away. You know, she recognized the voice. This person said something to her specifically that was very personal, and what an incredible experience for her, you know. And again, more validation for us. I mean, we didn't know the person that was coming through the box or being referred to. It was a personal connection for her.
And she was incredible to us because we just kind of walked up and we knew that was a popular place because of Zach with Ghost Adventures. And they have Zach's picture all over the place. And we asked to go in, and they allowed us to really, you know, kind of, I mean, they gave us full rein. It was wonderful. Betty was fantastic in doing that. She brought her buddy in, I think it was Marie Gangler was her name. And they were just so kind to us to give us the tour and allow us to just hang out there. And it was, so we want to thank her very much for that. I hope you're out there, Betty. But, you know, it was really cool because you brought in those boxes. You and Steve Hoff set those boxes down, the ITC boxes. And you know, go ahead and talk about that. And I remember something about you. I think you had a shot of whiskey or something. Is that what happened in that one room in the Washoe Club?
Not literally.
I don't know. You cough like it was that you had the fumes in your throat.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was a strange experience. So first of all, ITC, for people who aren't familiar with this term, it stands for Instrumental Transcommunication, which is quite a mouthful, hence we say ITC. And this essentially is using electronic means to communicate with spirits. Now, you know, commonly people will call these things ghost boxes. The so-called shack hack is really well known. There's a lot of different types of devices that do this at this point. And, you know, essentially they scan through radio signals and words will pop up in response to questions that you ask. Now, This actually, there's a long history of ITC communication, and it's pretty fascinating when you get into it. There's even some little bit of conspiracy in there, and it goes back to Edison,
really?
Who
Really?
Edison, in the last decade of his life, was working on what has become called the telephone to the dead.
Ooh.
And that's kind of where the conspiracy comes in that there's all this evidence that Edison worked on this in the later years of his life, but curiously enough, the Edison estate pulled, I think it was like 80 pages of entries and information from his final journals that related directly to this concept of spirit communication. Edison essentially believed that you know, really matter just, our life just transformed into a different type of matter. Hence, it was possible to communicate with spirits. And apparently the Edison estate wasn't very happy with some of his spiritualist inclined ideas after he passed away. So that information was pulled out of his journals that were later published. The pages did show up in the first edition of his journals, but later editions, it's not included in there. Now, you can find the documents by looking online. If you poke around enough, you'll find that it's, you know, it's been scanned and so forth. There were articles written for, I think it was Scientific American and a couple of other publications around the period. So he was very interested in the concept. And the curious thing is that the prototype, the diagrams, nothing about that device that he was creating have ever surfaced. So no one really knows what happened to it, even though he noted himself in articles that he was working on the device. So that's kind of a strange little side conspiracy to the whole ITC thing. But, you know, it's gone through different stages over the years. In the, oh, it must have been the late 50s, early 60s, a Swedish filmmaker named Jurgensen was recording bird songs, and he found that during recording the bird songs, he inadvertently recorded something else. When he went back and listened to it closely, it turned out to be the voice of his deceased mother.
Whoa.
And, you know, she was speaking very distinctly. He was absolutely sure it was her. She even used the nickname that she used for him. So this was kind of the beginning of, you know, what we come to know as EVPs, and
that's interesting.
Electronic voice phenomena is commonly called now. You'll see it on a lot of the ghost hunting shows,
mm-hmm.
where the guys would go in with their recorders, and now it's digital recorders, and they'll, you know, ask questions in an area that's reportedly haunted, and on playback see if they've picked up any voices or anomalous sounds and things like that.
Yeah, I want to ask you, how close do you think this is to, you know, Ouija board? What's the difference between, you know, talking to the other side through a Ouija board or through ITC?
You know, that kind of goes down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and
that's why I'm asking you.
Well, yeah,
because you'll go down that rabbit hole. I love it.
I don't know how far you want to get into the Ouija board. That's a real Pandora's box to open. Essentially, you know, the Ouija board is closer to a type of mediumship because it requires human interaction directly with the board itself. Now, this is not necessarily my opinion. This is just the standard approach to these devices, whereas an electronic device is just picking up the sounds that are coming through based on the concept that spirits are able to utilize electrical energy to send communications.
And there's some communication right there that's telling me that we got to take a break, and we will ask you more about, well, we'll lead you into, or let you go into the rabbit hole on your own on this one. It's David Weatherly that we're talking to, and you're listening to Coast AM. Owner of a Lonely Heart, that's Yes on Coast to Coast AM with Connie Willis. And you don't have to be a lonely heart anymore. Those of you into the paranormal, things that go bump in the night, creepy things that lurk around and you know that they are, You no longer have to be afraid to tell somebody that. First of all, you know you have Coast to Coast AM. You can always call us and tell us about it. We'd love to hear about this kind of stuff. But now you can actually, for those of you out there that are single, that's who I'm talking to out there right now. You can no longer be alone. I love this. It's called Paranormal Date. It's paranormaldate.com. You are not alone. This is something George Norrie put together along with one of his buddies. And now, those of you that are single and you're looking to find someone special, and we all know how it is. You know, we're all into talking about this cool stuff. Science, life after death, ghost stories, Bigfoot, Twilight Zone, UFOs, alternative medicine, conspiracy theories. We are passionate about it. We want to talk about it. And we need a like mind in our life to go out there and do this research together, have this fun together, where we want to get together and go, spend a weekend looking for Bigfoot or go ghost hunting, where somebody else might say, oh, it's the orchestra or nothing, right? So we've all run into those people, and those people think we're absolutely crazy nuts and they want nothing else to do with us, and that date ends pretty quickly. So don't let that happen anymore. Join in and take part of something that Norrie himself put together. It's Paranormal Date. You can go to paranormaldate.com to get right to it, or you can always check out on our website to find out more, and that's coasttocoastam.com. More with David Weatherly when we return here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM. Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, and we are talking with David Weatherly on Coast to Coast AM. And we are discussing, right before we took the break, we were going into a rabbit hole there, David. And my question was, and I guess where I'm really leading to is the ITC that you're talking about, which are these boxes, and then you have Ouija boards. You had actually said something when I was around you, and that's why I asked this question, because I thought it was really, really cool what you said. And you were saying that with the Ouija board, you are the conduit. You have to actually physically touch it, where with the ghost box, you don't have to do that. And you felt, from what I remember, and at least what I believe, you take away that physicalness that can get you in possibly some trouble.
When you're using the Ouija board, it's essentially a type of mediumship. You know, you're essentially opening your body up to these spirits to come through and utilize it. I mean, that's essentially how the board works. You have to be in contact with the planchette so that some type of spiritual energy can direct your hands or the hands of the people involved to move that planchette around to convey messages. And that's a whole different level of interaction with the spiritual energy than, you know, simply turning on an electronic device. Now, some people would argue that. You know, some people believe that any type of communication with the spirit realm is, you know, essentially evil or satanic or whatever. You know, I've had people tell me that, oh, these ghost boxes are the work of the devil and things like that. Curiously enough, you know, Pope Paul VI actually initiated a research project in ITC devices back in the 60s. So, you know, this has been looked at from a lot of different corners of the world, and people are essentially, you know, always going to search for answers about, you know, the question of whether there's something beyond this physical realm.
Well, and I know with your background, your shamanism background, and the fact that I think you will agree to this, that when people do pull out boards and they do pull out these boxes, the one thing that we really need to get across to people, if they're going to use these things, is you really have to be educated on how to deal with them and protect yourself, Because a lot of times people just get these boards and these boxes and just say, hey, so is there somebody there? And they don't know who or what they're calling up. And I think that's the dangerous part right there is, and I know a lot of people will fight and argue that one about, hey, you know, you can just, if you just ask for something to come up and talk with you, you have no idea what it is. It could be something, the most evil thing in the world. And also it can tell you that it's your mom or your dad and it's lying. So you don't know what you're going to pull up. Do you agree with that?
Oh, that's correct. I think anyone doing this type of work, you know, you need to have a spiritual foundation of some kind. And it doesn't matter whatever faith you're comfortable with, you know, utilize something for that extra level of protection, because, you know, we're getting into realms that are very, you know, very much the unknown. And, you know, going into it completely unprotected doesn't make any sense to do that. So, you know, the Ouija board, a whole mythology has grown up around that over the years. And it's funny because people give it, they give that board so much power. You know, I constantly hear stories, the whole urban legend about the board that, you know, you can't burn or destroy or anything else. And I hear these stories all the time, and I'd love to see one of those boards. I want to see the one that can't be burned, you know. I think that people project so much power into this physical object that it's sort of mind-boggling. And it's interesting, too, because some of the most diehard Christians are the ones who project that much energy into, oh, it's the devil's tool, it's you know, it's too powerful, you don't know what you're playing with. Well, it's true that a lot of people don't know what they're playing with when they get involved with these things, and that's where the danger lies. You know, the danger lies in the teenagers who sit in a room and, you know, throw out these statements like anyone who's here is allowed to come through and communicate. That's flinging the door open. You know, that's opening yourself and putting the invitation out there for anything that's available to come in and you know, utilize essentially that person's body to communicate.
Yeah.
You know, the board is the tool that's often used, yes, but the funny thing is I think so much urban legend has grown up around the board that it has empowered it even more in people's consciousness, and it causes more people to be attracted to it. Say, oh, and this is, you know, a lot of kids, a lot of teenagers do get involved with it because they think it's something dark or, you know, evil, and it's the rebellious nature of youth that they want to play with it. They want to test it. They want to see if anything is really going to happen. And throwing those invitations out there, that's where the trouble lies.
Well, one of the reasons why I myself personally prefer the boxes, the ITC, and you know, like Steve Huff was using with Huff Paranormal, and you had also brought out, and the fact and Anthony Sanchez's Ghost Hunter apps, is you don't have to have your hands on there and being in the midst of all that. And really, it's just a scary thing because things can jump on you and attach on you. At least that's my belief. And so I kind of like the ITC boxes and the Ghost Hunter apps and things like that over that, because you don't have to touch it. You can set it up and walk away from it and do your talking, and you don't have to be that little conduit in between. So if you're just joining us, we're talking with David Weatherly here on Coast to Coast AM, author of Black Eyed Children and also Strange Intruders. And I know that you always talk about Black Eyed Children with George a lot. He loves you to death. He thinks so highly of you. And so because of that, I want to ask you about some of the characters and creatures that are in the Strange Intruders book that you have. It was interesting. I'm looking through that. And I saw, David, that, you know, you talk to a lot of people and they tell you experiences, but you had experiences as well. And one of them, if I read it correctly, I was like, oh, I thought, is this David? Did David see this? And it was about the smiley guy, the big smile guy. Who was
really
that?
Man.
Tell me about him. What?
The grinning man.
The grinning man. Oh, I love the picture on the book. I love the picture.
The grinning man, you know, that term was coined, I believe, by John Keel, who, you know, someone who influenced me a lot when I got involved in this area. He's famous for the Mothman prophecies.
Mothman, yeah.
And he wrote a number of other books and explored all areas of the weird, UFOs and so forth. And
Great
Teal wrote
investigator.
about a case that occurred in 1966 in New Jersey, where these two young men witnessed this bizarre figure who was next to the interstate in this location that really is difficult for anyone to, physically get down to. And these two boys saw this figure with this just bizarre, huge grin, an impossibly large grin on his face. And, he was kind of different than the figure that I saw. The one that these fellows saw was very tall. He had the huge grin. He was wearing a jumpsuit and this bright, shiny belt. And it just kind of creeped them out and caused them to run. Now, this happened around the time of some strange UFO sightings in the area. So,
Interesting.
Keel had found a number of these cases of these bizarre grinning men that had popped up around the country at various times, often associated with UFO encounters. The particular incident that I experienced, this was in the 1980s in a rural part of North Carolina. And, I was talking earlier about the chemistry of certain people together, and that was kind of the case with this friend that I had at the time. His name was Tom, and it seemed that whenever Tom and I would go out and do things, unusual things would happen, strange synchronicities and so forth.
Is that because of you or because of Tom, you think?
Well, who can say? Maybe it's the combination of energies. It's
Okay.
really hard to say. But
Okay.
this particular incident was that we were driving on this backcountry road, and it's just kind of windy, and there aren't many houses at all. It's thickly wooded in areas at the time. Farmhouses were kind of few and far between. That's about all that was out there. And we were approaching a curve in the road, and both of us noticed that there was a figure standing on the side of the road. Now, this was just not an area where you saw people out walking around. They certainly weren't walking in the streets, and even where this figure was standing, the weeds were pretty high. And it was one of those really bizarre situations, Connie, where time seemed to slow down as we approached this figure. It seemed like everything was moving in slow motion. And sometimes the subtle things are the creepiest, and that's what happened with this situation. This guy was probably 6 foot tall or so. He had a top hat on and a long coat that was sort of Victorian style. His right hand was up under his chin. He was kind of rubbing his thumb and fingers together.
Ooh.
And beneath his outfit, visible was this huge silver belt. And it was just the weirdest ensemble, but the most disturbing thing was the grin. It was impossibly large. It reminded me instantly of the Joker, from the Batman comic books, this hideously large grin that anatomically just can't happen. And it was the most disturbing thing to go past this figure and just see him, staring into our car. Now, Tom was driving. I was in the passenger seat, so I had a little bit closer view of this guy because he was on the right-hand side of the road. And as soon as we passed him, time seemed to sort of snap back to normal. And I, with my head around to look in the rear view or in the rear window, and the figure was now standing in the road, staring at our car as we drove on. No way he could have moved this fast. It's just not possible. And I immediately started telling Tom to stop the car, to turn around. I wanted to see what this was. And of course, he had no interest in doing any such thing. He was kind of ranting and raving that, oh, this is probably, he's probably some psycho. He's a nutcase. And I finally convinced him to turn around. Let's just go back, because we had went, beyond another curve at this point, so I couldn't even see that section of the road. Finally convinced him, look, just turn around, just go back. I want to see if he's still standing there. So
Well, isn't that even what you guys were out to do to find neat things? Why was he taking off? Because he really didn't
not
think
on
it was
that
anything
particular day, we
special?
weren't, no.
Oh, well, there you go.
I convinced him to turn around, to drive back towards this figure. He did a U-turn, he headed back, you know, we got around the curve where the figure had been standing just ahead, and there's nothing. He's nowhere to be seen. And, you know, I'm kind of edging Tom on, go just a little bit further, a little bit further. He rolls up a little bit more. He stops the car, and, of course, I jumped out. And, you know, I wanted to see, you know, where is this guy? What is he? You know, where is the evidence? And I started looking everywhere. Now, the woods were thick enough that, you know, he just couldn't have run easily into the woods and you know, not be, you know, not without a great effort and not an obvious trail or anything. And it was just nothing. Now, I looked everywhere. I looked where he'd been standing. There was no evidence. There was no nothing. He had just vanished somehow.
And did it feel again like normal? Because you were talking, it kind of felt like slow motion and kind of a different feel and vibe when you did see him. So did it, was that feeling gone as well when you got back to that area?
Sort of. You know, it was a very bizarre, the atmosphere was strange. It really was.
Well, this funny thing, too, is, by the way, it's Coast to Coast AM you're listening to. We're talking to David Weatherly, and we're talking about The Grinning Man, a story that you can find in his book, Strange Intruders. When, you know, you talked about the other guys that saw The Grinning Man before, and you mentioned that big belt, and you saw that, too.
Right, right.
That's interesting.
That and the grin were the commonalities with the other cases of The Grinning Man.
The grin. Well, let me ask you about that. Okay, so... The Grinning Man, okay, the way you described it, I'm just going to throw this out there just from experience myself and learning things along the way, just throwing this out there because this is how we figure things out. But, okay, so UFO kind of things happen sometimes around this, and you see this Grinning Man. When you, hybrids, okay, let's go back to Dr. David Jacobs and hybrids, and in the hybridization project, which is people, aliens combined, and at one point before you get that perfect one that looks like a human, you got some real funky looking ones. Do you think this could be a funky looking hybrid, and it's down there, and these old clothes that you see are maybe from abductees from years ago that they have in some closet, and it covers their body? I don't know. It's not that far-fetched, is it?
You know, I mean, anything's possible. It really is. There's no telling exactly what these things are. It's very odd that they are so often connected to UFO cases. Even my incident, you know, later that same night, I found out there had been some UFO sightings in the area. And and actually, prior to that, what happened was when we got home that night, Tom lived not too far from me, but... a lightning storm had moved into the area that night, and Tom called to tell me that the house next door to his had been struck by lightning and caught fire. So that was kind of a weird, you know, synchronicity there. And then right after that, I also found out another family called me who lived close to Tom, called to say that, you know, they had spotted a UFO that evening. So I later found out that there were a few UFO sightings in the area. And... you know, you go back over some of these cases, and you just don't know how all these pieces fit together. That's part of the mystery of it.
Do you?
That's part of what makes it so intriguing. And you know, why in God's name these weird characters that are sort of, you know, clownish but unsettling at the same time, why they're showing up with a handful of UFO cases here and there, we just don't know.
And, you know, tell me if you know this, but, you know, sometimes there's cigar-shaped, sometimes there's triangle-shaped, you know, all the different shaped UFOs. I wonder if the Grinning Man is associated with cigar-shaped ones. Or, you know, has anybody ever taken a look at that when strange creatures or entities have been seen that it is also with this, you know, a similar shape each time of UFO?
I know that different shaped UFOs have shown up around, or Grinning Men have shown up around different varied shapes of UFOs.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any common theme, you know, one that's more dominant or not among the sightings. That would be interesting to look at.
Yeah, there's something to look into. So we're talking to David Weatherly and his adventures around the world on Strange Intruders, a book that he's authored, and... we're going to talk about some other things outside of his book as well, too. So Stay with us here. I'm Connie Willis, and you're listening to Coast AM.